since this is probably the last talk before we break for the day, and I understand I'm standing between you and the drink, so I like to keep it crisp, and feel free to ask questions as we go. Hey, my name is Joy Chandra. I'm a graphics architect. I work out of India and part of the bigger graphics team at Intel. Currently talking about the latest advancements that we have been doing in Intel graphics and media, and what does it bring to the platform? What does it bring to the user? Over a period of time, we at Intel have invested very heavily on graphics and media. And I like to share some of those key investments and achievements thereof that we have achieved using this technology. So this is basically the flow that I'm going to be going over. We'll introduce this 40 nanometer technology, which I'm sure you would have seen by now in some of the platforms. What are the key benefits that we derive out of it? What exactly are we doing in this technology to get that end user benefit in terms of getting into a really small, handhelds type of devices, tablets, Surface Pro, you would have seen by now. And then going deeper into active power management, basically trying to provide the best-in-class performance at best-in-class power as well. Thereafter, we'll be going deep slightly into graphics and what are the different programming models that we are trying to promote, and we'll wrap it up with media and display. So as many of you would have seen, Intel has this, we at Intel has a strategy of, going after process in a much more aggressive manner. And the way we go about doing it is basically we start off with a technology. We come up with a tick, which is basically trying to migrate to the new process technology, and then we go into advancing microarchitecture for that technology. In this series now, we are at 40 nanometers and counting. This happens to be the tick from a microarchitecture perspective, because we have made a transition from 22 nanometer to 14. In fact, as we go through, you will see that this actually happens to be a talk as well, because we have done some major advancements in graphics even for this technology. And what does this technology really bring? The way to look at this technology is it is basically scaling right from high-end servers all the way to tablets. It's catering to a broad spectrum of products. Now, these products have different optimization points. For example, this one, from a server perspective, we are focused on very high performance. Yes, the average power may not be of biggest concern to us, but we are definitely limited from the peak power perspective. And as we go down to the lowest end, which is the tablets, here it's all about power and how fast can we adapt to the lowest power segment. At the same time, keeping in mind that if a user is going to be looking for, some kind of a burst performance, we should be able to wake up, deliver that performance, and get back to sleep as fast as possible. Now, looking at the product from a high level, the key things that I like to like you to take away from this is, notice the amount of power reduction that we're looking at. 60% idle power reduction. That's a big number. And not just idle, we are also going after 30% of active power reduction. As we go through the foils forward, we'll see that some of it is actually coming in from a process perspective as a natural transition from 22 to 14. Then the second aspect is coming in from more aggressive process optimizations. And the third one is going into deep into architecture and microarchitecture enhancements to reduce power. So that's the key thing that we are bringing in. Of course, we are supporting the latest in class you know, APIs starting from OCL, which is OpenCL. We support shared virtual memory, DX11.2 and now DX12 ready. And of course, we are supporting a plethora of standards, including OpenGL, which goes in for, you know, a wider class of GPU devices as well. From this time around, this is, by the way, it's also called the Broadwell architecture, for those of you who are familiar with the terminology. This time around, we actually have also invested in the faster FPU operations, which is a floating point operations, as well as vector. We have a much more power efficient approach, and we'll go deeper into this. We have accelerated cryptology quite a bit on this. And very importantly, the integrated voltage regulator that's there in this architecture is the second generation regulator, wherein a lot of optimizations have been done from the first generation's perspective. So all in all, as we look at this architecture, this is a truly optimized system for dynamic as well as dynamic thermal and power management aspects. We do a lot of dynamic power savings. We do a lot of thermal type of power savings, and we'll go into deeper into what type of voltage regulator savings we're doing. All in all, we have been able to, all this has led us to get into the tablet form factor with a much better performance. Now, this is kind of a busy slide. So I'd like to up-level this slide for you all. As we move from one node to another, that is from the previous process to 40 nanometer, there are certain things which come naturally, and some of them which get added on top of this process. Now, the key vectors that we normally judge a process there is basically one is capacitance, the second is the operating voltage, and then leakage and area scaling. Traditionally, capacitance has, from a node to node, it goes down by 25%, that is 0.75 of the old process. But in this particular foray that we have done for this architecture, we have taken this capacitance down further. We have actually gone to 35% lower than the previous node. What it does is it results in a 25% lower power consumption as opposed to a regular process migration that you would see. Similarly, now on the minimum operating voltage, this is basically the voltage at which the circuit is guaranteed to work without a fault. From process to process migrations, we tend to keep the voltage at the bare minimum and basically scale on performance. This time around, we have actually lowered the process. And for those of you who are familiar with the power equation, CV square F, voltage has a squared effect on power, and hence you see a much lower power consumption due to lowering of voltage. The other key thing that we have done this time around is we have optimized this process towards graphics. We have optimized this process towards that transistor improvement, which is key to graphics, and is actually leading into a lot of power savings. Leakage is another one where we have actually, the original one being 0.8x, we have actually gone 2x the target from a reduction perspective. And this is basically leading to a lot of power reduction even when you're idling. Area scaling is typically about 0.5 to 0.6, and we are on target for that. And by the way, this is a process which is already in production, and chips are coming out as we speak already. Switching track, going into power management. You have heard of this turbo mode that we have in Intel CPUs. Basically, what happens is when your system is so to say, lightly loaded, we operate in a power level one, which is basically the regular system power. Now, when you jump into a workload which requires a lot more performance, traditionally we have been going into PL2, which is power level two, up until the previous architecture. What we have done this time around is for specific periods of time, under very measured circumstances, we scale up from power level two to power level three. One thing worth noting here is this is not a level which we would like to keep it over extended period of time, because if you do that, your battery starts getting impacted. So we manage those aspects very well and keep this PL3 excursions to minimum. We just do it only during that time when you absolutely need that performance and then bring it down right away. Now what this does is this actually gives you that fast response time that you would be expecting when you're surfing or you're just flashing, say, a media clip. You need that that performance to kickstart, and that's how we get it. The second aspect we have been very heavily focused on is voltage regulators. Voltage regulators have themselves been a big consumer of power. And as you all know, voltage regulators, those characteristics or efficiencies are not the same across the entire spectrum. So this time around, what we have done is we've actually monitored the demand. So the way to read this graph is this is the efficiency factor and this is the load. And what we have done is we have put in advanced algorithms to improve voltage regulator. And what we do is under lightly loaded conditions, we actually modulate the voltage. Now, by modulating the input voltage, you're actually improving the efficiency. And this is a very fine technique to improve that, the fiber efficiency, the integrated voltage regulator efficiency under lightly loaded conditions. What it does is it gives you that much extra power, which can be translated to battery life, or you could use it for performance upside. The other stuff that we have also done is there has been there's basically nonlinear droop. This is the voltage drop across the regulator itself that we have improved on by almost 50%. This is inherently improving the fiber efficiency all across. And this has been directly translated to 5% speed improvements. Or conversely, you could say at same speed, I'll get 10% extra power savings or battery life. Now, in terms of managing the excursions, and especially trying to keep the system robustly running at a very fast turnaround time, we have the ability to go from the maximum power mode to the lowest power floor mode, power mode, in very short time. Yes, we will use the maximum power available to cater to the performance asked for, or we could go into a really deep state where it is we get into sub 3-watt graphics power envelope or sub 4 watts, CPU plus graphics power envelope. We reduce the power quite a bit. How do we do that? There are basically three components of power. One is the core, the CPU frequency. The other is the chipset part of it. And then we have the GT, we also call it as graphics GPU frequency. Notice what is happening here is in the max turbo mode, all of them are running at full speed. As you lower down the power envelope, the chipset basically starts throttling. You actually reduce the duty cycle of the chipset itself. And notice the CPU frequency, it's going down in steps. And the interesting part is, at this point of time, it does not go down anything lower than this. It actually goes down to zero. So we start modulating the frequency, the duty cycle of the frequency itself. And so does the graphics. And I'll come to more details on this. Basically, what we are trying to do here is at the minimum voltage that we have achieved via the process, we would like to modulate the response rate of the entire system and reduce the frequency or reduce the power as much as possible. Another way to look at it is from fundamental physics. You know, this is a typical voltage and frequency curve. You would see that, you know, towards this side, beyond 0.6 volts, a linear increase in voltage is resulting in linear increase in frequency, and hence the power. But as you go down on the left-hand side, you notice the voltage is constant. These are basic physics of the process itself, which the process doesn't allow for reliable operation, doesn't allow anything lower than this voltage to work on. Now, when you get into this situation, how do you save power in this region from, say, 0.5 to 0.2? This, you just can't do anything from a voltage perspective. What we end up doing is we have introduced a concept called dynamic duty cycle, DCC, we call it. And I have a small clip towards the end. I'll show that to you. It's basically, this is a place where we start modulating the graphics performance. We start modulating the frequency or the duty cycle of the clock itself. By doing that, what we are doing is we are basically racing the circuit towards faster speed, and when we are done with the work, we basically go into deep power state, which is basically turning off the voltage in these areas. So that's how we basically get across the process limits from a power reduction perspective. You'd have seen this comment from Anandstick. They call it as an interesting feature, which is both a bit of a brute force. Yes, brute force, because we are actually actively modulating the duty cycle of the clock. And a bit of a genius, because in doing this, you have to monitor a lot of parameters, make sure that the circuit goes to sleep and comes out of it reliably. And that's where the key to success is from our process perspective. Another way to look at it is this is again a duty cycle control in action. And the way to read this graph is, when you are here, the graphics engine is operating in its efficient mode. And this is basically the efficiency envelope that we are trying to achieve. Now, if I'm already working in an area where I have enough performance and frequency headroom, I work here. And when I'm done with the work, notice the graphics goes to idle here. So I bring it down to idle. And when the requirement bumps up from a graphics usage perspective, I wake this graphics up, ask him to work at double the speed or whatever the speed required, and go back. So basically try to keep this engine alive only for the time when I require it to be. By doing this, what I end up doing is I end up saving on idle power. You know, the system on the same power envelope, you could end up saving as much as 50% of the power itself. Now, switching track a little bit on what we're doing in graphics and heterogeneous processing. This is a cartoon diagram of the overall architecture. We have several new things from an architecture, microarchitecture perspective. What we do is we have a much better performance per watt. A lot of enhancements to achieve this. A new microarchitecture, and we'll go into more details of how do we achieve it. Support for the latest APIs as we go through. And a lot of emphasis on media processing. Not only are we 2x faster than the previous generation, but we have improved image processing, signal, image quality by leaps and bounds in this architecture. And last but not the least, true 4K end-to-end support, right from content creation to encoding, decoding, to display, all the way through. This is the first time we have a true 4K support. Jumping into the first one, which is the microarchitecture perf per watt enhancements that I was talking about, 14 nanometer process benefits are definitely quite a bit. They result in both dynamic as well as leakage power savings. We also do lower voltage optimizations. I was telling you, we tend to reduce the voltage beyond the regular limits of the process itself. And then inward looking, we've done a fairly aggressive amount of power optimizations in the circuit itself, the architecture itself. Lot of places where we have suppressed toggles. Toggles are basically wasteful changes in signal levels when not needed. For example, if there's a multiplier which is active, which is the output is not used, yet the input is toggling, so the output is toggling, and so on and so forth, you would see the multiplier is consuming power. So you basically suppress those type of toggles and make sure you use, you wake up the circuit only when it's required, even during on state. Then the next one, which is a big power consumer for any circuit, in general, is clock. Anything and everything that can be done towards optimizing clock power is always beneficial from a power perspective. So a lot of emphasis has been put up on reducing this power. All these have led to a significant amount of power savings, which we translate to performance as well. Now, in terms of API support, we have made rapid progress in this architecture and end up supporting a wide range of APIs, right from DirectX 11.1, 11.2 to being DX12 ready, OGL 4.3, OpenCL APIs. All these are supported. And when you support these, you're actually adding a fair amount of area, a fair amount of gates. Those gates, while supporting the API, also bring down my power and perf advantages. So these performance and power numbers that we are talking about, the savings, are on top of the additions that we have done here. And the way to read this architecture is what we have on the left-hand side are a lot of fixed function processing for graphics. And then we have a compute array of shaders, shader cores, we call them execution units. And then the backend caching structure to support the entire architecture. So what we have done is we have boosted both the elements, the fixed functions, in terms of performance upgrade, as well as the compute itself. We're talking about, 20% increase in compute from the previous architecture at the same GT2, which is basically, I would say, an entry-level laptop itself. Apart from that, as these new APIs are coming in, there's a concept of tessellation. Tessellation is about trying to represent a body, a curved surface, through a wireframe model, and to get a better and better rendering of the curved surface, you would like to have smaller and smaller triangles. What you're doing is you're basically tessellating those triangles into smaller surfaces, smaller triangles, to cover and show a realistic effect. This type of processing is very heavily present in DX11 and DX12 class of workloads. So we actually ended up improving this performance on the tessellation unit to take care of this. The other key part in a GPU architecture is to beef up the texture sampler performance. We have beefed it up by 50%. This is a huge, huge leap from previous architecture. And this is basically, the way to understand texture sampler operations would be is when you draw a room, and if this is the wall that you're drawing, the only difference between this wall and this wall is the texture. Now, this sampler basically comes into play when it's trying to render this type of a wooden texture versus a cloth-based texture. That's where we do a lot of this texture sampler operations. And with new and advanced workloads, you know, this part of the unit of graphics is getting more and more into demand. So we recognize that, and we have beefed it up by almost 50% here. And the other aspect to look at it is we've increased the compute by 20, but we have improved the sampler by 50. So in effect, we actually have a higher texture sampler to flop ratio, which is basically indicative of the workloads that are coming in. And as you all know, this is serious amount of compute which is going these days into GPUs. So when you are not using it in for graphics workloads, you would still like to use this compute because we have invested so much of die area for this GPU. That's where general purpose compute comes in. GPU performance has been beefed up significantly because so many compute elements are sitting in, and we the best to make it more and more useful, we have actually improved the general purpose compute path in the graphics architecture itself. And the key thing towards doing this is actually this L3 cache sitting in here. We have invested a lot in this area as well. We've increased this cache size significantly. And towards the back end of the unit, a lot of these optimizations which are specific to graphics, for example, Z-culling, when you're seeing a surface in front of you and the one behind you is not going to be visible, you could save compute, you could save power by not computing the one which is hidden. That's where the Z throughput improvement increases, helps us all over. And these days, what you would see is a lot of these GUI type of workloads, Angry Birds, Cut the Rope, all these workloads are actually very heavy from a pixel rendering perspective, not from a compute perspective. They are actually having very little compute, but a lot of time they're actually spending time writing it out to the caches and main memory. Now, to cater to that, we have increased the pixel backend rate, which is basically at the rate at which this GPU writes it out, writes out the blend data to caches and main memory. We've improved this. So we actually tweaked it for those workloads which don't end up using the entire GPU, in the most stressful manner, but rather they are heavy on the backend side. We have actually tweaked that to improve the performance there as well. Another thing that happens is, from a system perspective, there are two or three elements which consume the maximum power. One is the CPU, second is the GPU because of the amount of area that we invest on the process, and the third is the memory bandwidth we consume. Because every time you go to the DRAM, you spend a lot of power. So these type of caches, when you increase them, they reduce the bandwidth going spilling out of the GPU or spilling over to the memory controller. And hence they help us in saving power. Now, switching tracks a little bit, we talked about GPGPU. What we've done here is we actually put up a seamless programming model, a unified system memory model for heterogeneous computing. Heterogeneous computing is basically a compute across different processing elements. It could be the big core, the CPU. It could be the shader core sitting inside GPU. And when the program spreads over both the compute elements, by nature, since the environments are different, we call them heterogeneous. But from a programmer's perspective, it's very important that he or she sees the same memory model. He doesn't have to reprogram or change the program based on how the heterogeneous behavior of the machine is. We have actually made some caches coherent inside the GPU itself. The way to read this is these are, this shade is for coherent caches, and these are non-coherent. You would see that part of the GPU itself is coherent. What it does is, you know, the same data structure can flow across CPUs and GPUs, helps, you know, the programmer equivalently. Now, we also have explicit support for shared virtual memory, which is again a prerequisite for this type of processing. And when we go into shared virtual memory, we are actually doing both coarse and fine grain. This is basically providing, you know, that much flexibility, that much granularity to the programmer, so that you know, when the program is written, it makes best use of the hardware. We have more details in terms of programming guidelines and the usage at the white papers that are listed out at this site. Would encourage you guys to, you know, take a look at it whenever needed. All in all, what we are trying to do is by providing these type of coherency constructs, we have enabled some kind of a seamless interface or seamless programming model for the user. Now, switching track a little bit, so far we talked about graphics. There are two important components of a GPU beyond the graphics, which is basically media and display. We'll be touching briefly into what type of enhancements or improvements we have done in these areas to support the new usage models and the new form factors. Now, the way to look at this media engine, that's the first one that we'll be talking about, is media engine has two portions of the hardware. One is it uses the same shader codes which are sitting inside my 3D graphics for some kind of programmable options, programmable workloads, for example, image processing, image enhancements, some focused codec operations. And then we have, you know, dedicated blocks for, you know, media processing. For example, this one right here. What we have done, overall, by increasing the compute shader, the shader units by 20%, and sampler units as well, we have achieved 2x faster media processing at a much better quality. That's the key. You know, if I was to look at ISO quality, this processing, which is 2x, might have been 4x. But we are increasing on both sides, the quality as well as, you know, the throughput. And how did we achieve it? You know, I'll start bottom up this time around because we talked about the process. First of all, significant power reduction due to this 14 nanometer process helps us in leveraging this power savings towards speeding up the media processing itself. That's number one. The number second one is, as I said, you know, we have increased the number of shaders here, so that increases raw horsepower of the machine, and I use that. Then what I have done is, we have gone into specific areas of the machine to improve performance. First one is we have actually a concept called media sampler. These are basically focused map operations, which are very close to sampler operations. And we've invested a lot of gates in this. We have actually made it twice as fast. And from an end user perspective, the thing that you would see benefit from here, this is the Intel QuickSync video. And there are some major enhancements in terms of QuickSync performance that we have achieved using this. We have this video quality engine, which is sitting in out here, has been improved. It's now twice as fast as the previous one. We have support for some new standards. We now have VPA decoding support. In addition to the other support which we always had, AVC, VC1, MPEG2, MVC. We have GPU accelerated HEVC, which is a key interface, which is a key standard these days. And we have actually accelerated using GPU, shader cores itself. And this is not just the decoding, encoding as well. And then support from for some additional stuff, additional codecs as we go up the GPU stack. Remember, we are talking about GPUs right from tablet to laptops, two-in-ones, laptops, hybrids, desktops, servers. So the graphics scales. The higher-end SKUs have additional formats, much more gets invested on video quality improvements. And then overall, all in all, there has been a special emphasis to go improve image quality wherever needed, because we have these extra gates which are coming in as part of, process, contraction, so to say. Remember, we have scaled area down by about 0.5, so to say. And that area has been used for investing in these, sections. Now, we have had, the way to read this file is we actually support both 4K as well as Ultra UHD decode formats. And we are doing this in a 4.5 watt thermal constrained environment, which is very, very tight for these type of playbacks. We can support multiple streams, 4, or out here it's been listed out as 6, in a mosaic format. And all this is coming in that constrained power envelope we are talking about. We have, 25% longer full HD video playback time from the previous one. Again, an attribute of the amount of power savings techniques that we have, put in this architecture. We have also speeded up, 4K to 1080p, transcode. Support for a wireless display. This architecture now supports a full 1080, full HD 1080 wireless display in clone as well as extended modes. Now, so far we were talking about performance improvements, power reduction. Let's spare a moment for the image quality that we are achieving. The image on the left is the fourth generation, the previous one, fourth generation Intel Core processor. And image on the right is the fifth generation Intel Core processor. This is a video coding, encoding, decoding screen. And notice this window has been actually zoomed in this part. See this window out here is this window. The difference between fourth generation and fifth generation is notice the clarity of those numerals here. They're kind of blurred here, but out here they're far more clear. This is a direct effect of image quality improvements. And there are many more. There is image enhancement stuff. Unfortunately, the resolution of this project is not that good, but you can still make it out. This was the previous image, and look at the sharpness of this image. In fact, if you come look at the laptop screen, you will see that every single line here is clear, whereas this one is blurred. So a lot of image sharpening has been done from the fourth to fifth generation. Content adaptive noise reduction. Again, there are grains on the pedals. The grains in the background have been removed significantly. This looks much better on a laptop. The resolution here is not that good to show this. So you can already see, these image enhancement techniques have already reached the level of, the resolution or the quality of the displaying device has a bigger effect than the GPU itself. It has crossed that limit. Coming to 4K support, We're supporting 4K all through, right from content to content creation, encode, decode, all the way to monitor. And this is a result of advancements across codec, where we have AVC-based 4K60 hardware encode and decode support now. We have HEVC-based GPU acceleration, accelerated encode and decode at 4K30. Of course, this is on a slightly higher SKU, but these levels of performance are very, very difficult to obtain in the, the power envelope we're talking about. From a display perspective, we're supporting DisplayPort 1.2 at 3840, 2160 at 60 hertz, and 4K at 24 hertz, HDMI 1.4. The type of panels we are going in, and the monitor scale, have a big, range to scale from, 12 to 31 inches. Big, big differences. Now, to summarize, what did we talk about? We talked about significant performance per watt enhancement, both from a process perspective, power management techniques, voltage regulator, microarchitecture enhancements in terms of adding more computes, adding more texture sampler. Going down to the lowest level where, any part of the circuit which is not used is quiesced. The toggle is suppressed just to make sure that it doesn't burn that extra power, because we need that microwatt, we need that milliwatt, which it all adds up towards final battery life saving. Then of course, we continue to be committed towards supporting the latest APIs. These APIs come at a significant expense of silicon die area, significant effort from a driver perspective. We are continuing to invest here, and we will be doing it as we go forward. In fact, in the coming months, you will see a lot more exciting products coming out of Intel, enhancing these virtues even better. From a media perspective, yes, we have doubled the throughput at a much better image quality, and then the 4K. End of the day, what it is we are striving towards a stellar 3D performance, 3D media, compute, and display performance. Our process leadership is well known in the industry. Our 14 nanometer process is already in full production. We are translating these process advancements to direct end user benefits in terms of more area, more compute, more horsepower, as well as reduced power when it's not being used. So it's actually being optimized from both sides. We are investing heavily in imaging and video analytics, facial recognition, gesture recognition. This compute, real estate, which is sitting in a GPU, is very serious compute, very high compute. Now, the trick of the game is how do we utilize these computes in the most optimal manner? Because anytime you rev up an engine which is burning a lot of gas, it takes a lot of power out of the system. So what we need to do is make sure that when you switch these circuits on, they're switched on for the optimal amount of time for optimal usage, and then shut down back right away. That's what we do here. And of course, we're looking at a stunning 4K performance. The type of thickness that we have achieved is a sub 9 millimeter fanless tablet, and there are many more coming, thinner ones. Now I'll spend a couple of minutes just to show some of the clips that we ran in the labs. In fact, I ran this just before coming here, measuring some of the performances. So this clip is basically talking about quick sync speed up that we have achieved in this architecture. This is a 4K clip, which was recorded out. Unfortunately, could not get the hardware in time for the conference. But this is the type of, I'll just hold this right now. This is the result you get out of a regular, transcode, which you do, using a regular CPU type of structure, where we actually notice the FPS that has been achieved, about 8 frames per second. This is transcode. And the time it takes is about 10 minutes to achieve this type of, output. Now, we'll run the same clip again, but this time around, we'll use a quick sync video. Now, with the quick sync enabled, which is all the hardware accelerations enabled, look at the FPS that we have achieved. 9 frames per second has moved to 58 frames per second. Okay, and the same clip is now done in 90 seconds. Extremely fast, quick sync video throughput that has come through in this architecture. Let's flip to the next foil. This is, remember we talked about dynamic duty cycle control, where we actually are throttling the power consumed or throttling the duty cycle of the clock to hence throttle the power that we consume to the bare minimum. So this is basically with duty cycle enabled. Now, the way to read this, apologies, this screen is very small. I'll try to read this out for you. This is graphics bench, GFX benchmark, which is a well-known industry standard that's being run. And down below, we have some capture scripts to see, basically gathering the stats from inside the hardware to show what type of clock frequencies are we using, what type of power envelopes are we using, so on. So the first run is with DCC disabled, and the type of results we are getting in this is, so before I go into the numbers here, I'd like to discuss some terminologies. C0 state is the fastest or the most power consuming state, is basically the active state for the CPU as well as GPU. C0 is basically the package C0, which is the entire chip wherein it includes the CPU as well as the GPU. It's at 100% residency. So it's always there, always active. The chip is always active. RC is the render C state. This is basically the GPU C state. And C6 is the lowest power C state. So RC6 is basically the state of the the GPU when it is shut down. Notice it's at 0%. That is, the package is always active, GPU is always active, and the frequency that we see that the GPU is using is somewhere around 200 to 250 megahertz. It's limited by the amount of power envelope I have in the system. If I'm running my package all the time, I only have a fixed amount of power, and that I'm using to translate it to just 200 to 250 megahertz of GPU frequency. Not much, right? Now watch the fun. The same setup is now run with DCC enabled. It'll just come in a minute. Here. This is now with dynamic duty cycle control enabled in the system. Again, the same thing, the render C state. Now you see, there are times when render is always on, And there are times when the render is completely off. So it's actually sprinkling fair bit between 0% to 100%. Idea here is to be at this as much as possible because it saves my dynamic as well as leakage power. And look at it from a package C state perspective. This is C0 is always on. There are a fair amount of dots here, which is basically depicting the percentage of time my package is shut down. And what does it result in? It has a direct impact to the power envelope available, power available to the GPUs. Now, remember that was 200 to 250 megahertz that we have achieved. Now, watch the fun. We have gone up to 450, and actually there are some dots, it's not visible here, they go up to 500 megahertz. Same power envelope, everything same. All we did was we enabled duty cycle, dynamic duty cycle. This is such a key feature, and these features are not easily enableable. The reason being, when you do this, one needs to know the process characteristics. The advancements in 14 nanometers are key to achieving it. Because we know, you know, when to throttle the transistor, when to throttle my SRAMs, you know, different aspects of my process to slow down the system, get that extra power, translate it into, you know, energy savings. That's DCC for you. So all in all, with these type of power saving features, we basically have translated process leaderships, advancements in architecture, advancements in microarchitecture into enabling graphics across a huge spectrum of devices here. This is basically the stat summary which came in, which is calling out, you know, the package C6 state has increased because it's no more in C0 active all the time. There are portions where it goes into, the package goes to sleep, and there's significant amount of time when the render is also, going to sleep. This is directly, now this is, the left side is with DCC enabled. C6 is at 11%. Look at the right side, which is DCC disabled. You know, the package is always in C0, which is 100%, and this is zero. Similarly, render, RC6 part, which is the GPU part, with DCC disabled, I'm hardly there at 1%. Whereas I'm able to get to up to something like 40%. That's raw power savings for you. With that, I have come to the end of the presentation, and I'll be more than happy to take any questions you may have. Looks like there are no questions, but feel free to go look at this presentation has been uploaded at the WinHack site. Do take a look at those white papers, they're very key. In fact, from an app developer's perspective, from a person who is writing, porting this, customizing this device for his or own, usages, those notes are very useful. With that, thank you all for being here. Have a good day.